Well, 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 well. Hello. Hello and welcome. Welcome to episode 106 of the City Brew Tours podcast, where we explore the best craft beer scenes around the country. I'm your host, Brian. Off to a great start here already. I am happy again to be joined by my co-host for these Cincy episodes, Braxton. How's it going, Braxton?
Hey, it's going great here in Pittsburgh. We have Taylor Swift coming. So if you're in the Pittsburgh area to see Taylor Swift, I will not see you there. I'll be one of those Pittsburghians going, why is traffic so bad?
Yeah, I will also be one of those people. But also because I have FOMO and I like three Taylor Swift songs, I'll be jealous of everybody that is going to the concert because I will be working both Friday and Saturday night, most likely serving people that are on their way there. We had a friendship bracelet making Taylor Swift themed thing at the brewery on Sunday, and I felt left out of that. I've never wanted a friendship bracelet in my life, and I had FOMO of that. And I got a friendship bracelet. It's around here somewhere.
All right.
But yeah, so otherwise doing great. I'm back in my home office here. It was great. Shout out again to Victor at Streetside and Garrett at Streetside for the great hospitality last week. And good to be doing the podcast from somewhere where there are only people watching me virtually, and I don't have to watch them stare at me while I'm talking into a computer. Yeah. Braxton, how you doing otherwise?
Man, I'm good. Another great day. Get a chance to sit down with you guys and talk a little bit and enjoy some beers. You can't have a better day than this.
Yeah, you can't. As far as a Tuesday goes, I think we're spilling the beans on that. We record on Tuesdays. As far as a Tuesday goes, doesn't get much better than that, because tonight we have another wonderful brewery from the Cincinnati area. We'll be featuring Listerman, which is a brewery that originally opened as a homebrew store in the early 90s. It was opened by the founders, Dan and Sue Listerman. Hey, guess where they got their name from? They began as a two-barrel brewery operation in 2008 after running a homebrew store for well over a decade, and grew to be one of Cincinnati's most respected and beloved breweries. In February of 2023, just earlier this year, the Listermans announced that they were retiring, and the brewery would live on under new ownership from Steve and Terry Ipsum. The Listerman said, quote, the Ipsum's quality ability to focus on quality craft beer, guest experience, community involvement, and employee culture will enable them to carry on the Listerman Brewing family tradition and values, end quote. In terms of quality craft beer, guest experience, community involvement, and employee culture, I can't imagine what else you'd want from a brewery. And it sounds like the Listermans are very confident in their new owners, continuing the legacy of the brewery and continuing to make a beer that Cincinnati loves so much. And we're going to be featuring two of the beers that they make tonight. Their Nutcase, which is a peanut butter porter that won a bronze medal at the GABF in recent past, and probably other medals that I'm forgetting about and our guests can probably correct me on. And we'll also be enjoying their Hophead New England IPA, two very different styles, which is going to make for a great, interesting night of drinking. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome on our guest now. He is the head brewer and director of operations at Listerman Brewing Company. Please welcome Matthew Daniel.
There it is. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey, welcome.
To be transparent, we're all struggling with technology.
I'm always struggling with technology, so it's kind of par for the course for me right now.
It's so funny. I do the Zoom call once a week now. I feel like every week I have to like double check things. And did I get this right? Did I get this right? And I have been literally being paid to do something on Zoom since the beginning of COVID. And every time I'm second guessing myself. And did I get this one right? Did I hit the record? Even now when I say that, let me double check. We are recording.
It's funny you say that, because as I was like logging into this and it was telling me like, oh, it's recording, it's not recording, and all, I was like, I couldn't do any of this right now. I would be completely lost. I don't know if you'd even call it a benefit or not. When we went through COVID at Listerman, I was one of about five people who we furloughed most of our staff. So I was one of about five or six people that stayed on. And so I almost look at it like a loss. Like I didn't get the experience to live life through Zoom to get that, that experience of knowing how to operate everything. So now whenever I do a Zoom thing, I'm like, I don't know. I think I can do this. Follow the link, click the button, do the thing. I think I got this.
You made it here. You made it.
I did. Somehow I did.
All right. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. We got lots of questions here, but as always, we're going to start out with our quick sip questions. These are fast questions. We want fast answers, and these will help us get to know you fastly. Ready?
Fast. Do it.
Let's do it. What's your favorite non-Listerman beer?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with, lately, I'm going to put it as a Kronbacher.
Oh, who makes that?
It's an international lager of Pilsner, really clean Pilsner. There's a local bar. I don't really get much work and home life. I don't get to go to do much. And so there's a local beer bar downtown here in Cincinnati, and it's his like go-to thing. It's his, if I know I can get my hands on some Kronbacher, and it's just nothing beats a properly made good crispy boy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's one of those words that I've seen a bunch of times, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody say aloud. And now I'm like, oh, I know exactly what beer that is. favorite style of beer to brew?
Style to brew. I actually really enjoy doing the traditional styles. You know, we try to kind of rotate throughout, depending on the time of year and things, whether it's going to be our Dunkel, our Schwarz beer, Czech Pilsner, things like that. I really like hammering down each time we kind of bring those back. Just being able to make those little bitty adjustments. And once we finish those batches, I like to sit down with our brew team and we'll go through it and we'll taste it and be like, all right, what if we could do anything different? What would we do different about this? Maybe it's just a touch too much on the bitterness or a touch too much on that maltiness character, or if, you know, this year's Dunkel, loved it. But I already have notes on it. It was like maybe just a tad too roasty. So little things like that, because they're so intricate and you can do such little things to lean one way or the other. I love really hammering down those styles, because as say in brewing is like when you get to the traditional stuff, especially like there's nothing to hide behind. I really find that those are the most challenging, but they're also the most rewarding.
And it's great to hear you're so critical of the Dunkel, because as your employee bio states, that's your favorite Listerman beer. So.
I mean, I'm probably a little extra aggressive on my critique of that one for that exact reason. So
yeah, that makes sense. what's your favorite season in Cincinnati?
I'm gonna go fall. Cool. I grew up in the deep south, so I'm good on the like super hot, humid. I'm good. I've spent time in the far northeast. I don't ever need to see snow again in my life. I don't think spring exists anymore. It's not a real thing. There's typically about a 10-day period here where it's like, oh, I think we're done with winter. And then it's like, oh, it's hot. It's real hot. So fall's the sweet spot, not to mention I got my boy Joe Burrow doing his thing in the fall. So I get something to get really excited about once that time of year rolls around.
Yeah, BDJB. referring back to your employee bio, you said that your favorite snack was sushi. What's the best sushi spot in Cincinnati?
Oh God. So I have to admit, I'm a little spoiled. I lived out on the West Coast for most of my 20s and early 30s, and I had the opportunity to get just really good sushi all the time. So The bar's a little high, but I have to say, especially because it's in the neighborhood and I can order it really late at night. I go to a place called Ichiban. It's over in Hyde Park. They make some good stuff.
And finally, have you ever seen Bigfoot?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, leave them wanting more. That's a great answer.
Yeah, it's in my NDA. I can't disclose.
Bigfoot's litigious. That's what we'll take away from that. Well, thank you for the quick sip question. Yeah. Answers.
All right. So we have a awesome beer here in front of us, our first beer. What can you tell us about, you can't see it right here, but what can you tell us about Hophead?
So Hophead is, genuinely, it's a labor of love. So I took over the head position at Listerman in 2021. And one of the things that was a high priority for me was to really revisit and restructure our approach to IPAs. No matter who you talk to, love them or hate them, you got to accept the nature of the beast. And I always say the tail wags the dog. If you want to have, you want to put beer flowing out of your taps, you want to put beer on shelves, you got to be putting IPAs out. It's just the nature of it. And so, we had kind of, in my personal view, I felt we as a brand had gotten a little stagnant with our IPAs, and especially considering just how much of that style you can find out in the world and in your local bottle shops and everything like that. Like, you really got to step it up because people have so many great options that they can turn to. So it was definitely a style that from day one I said we really got to focus hard on how we want to readdress this. And so we spent most of we spent most of 2022. We actually released a series of we actually released them as experimentals. They were all named after the different characters from Reservoir Dogs. So we dropped a Mr. Pink, a Mr. Black, Mr. Blue, and Mr. Orange. And each time, what we were basically doing was we really tried to every single one had a slightly different malt bill. We tried everything from mash hopping to bio transformation hopping to no bio hops at all to only terminal dry hop to 70% attenuation dry hop. We tried all these different techniques to kind of see where were we going to land that was going to make us the most proud of that product moving forward. And we took the culmination of all of those experiences and those trial batches to basically say, like, these are the things that we really recognized worked well for us, and how do we want to apply that to something as a new flagship? Because Listerman has actually never had a flagship IPA. We've always released a couple of other things that we try to keep in rotation, but we've never had a staple IPA that we can tell people, you can count on this to be on tap in our tap room. You can find it around town. You can find it at Kroger. And so the goal was to land on something that we were really excited about and make it our flagship. And, you know, when we do a lot of our one-offs and stuff like that with the IPA category, and especially because, you know, New England has been king for so long now, I'm hoping that trend is starting to shift a little back to these American IPAs. But we wanted to make sure flagship didn't just fall completely into that, like, sweet, fruity, completely no bitterness. It just, that's not what I want in a beer that I'm going to count on at all times. I still want to get some of that bitter background. So I'm really proud of where we ended up with this. It's a Citra El Dorado. I'm a big fan of El Dorado hops. I love what they can do when you utilize them on the hot side, because they too can give you a nice, like, really soft and balanced bitterness. Yeah, and it's still really aromatic. It still gives you a lot of those really great flavors, but it still provides enough of a backbone to it that you don't feel like, if I get those really sweet, you know, the New Englands that are just like, oh man, it's just a juice bomb. Yeah. I feel like after I get through about 60-70% of that glass, I'm like, I feel like I've had candy. Like, it's a little too much. So bitterness is your friend in that drinkability, in the sense that you're going to be able to say you can go back to another sip. It's going to help you kind of quench and go back in. So we really wanted to just hammer down that fine sweet spot between, we know that consumers nowadays are really excited about hazy and juicy and tropical and all those kind of things. So how can we deliver on that front, but still make sure that we are presenting that nice balance of bitterness on the back to kind of round it all out. And that's where this one came from. So we started doing that. I think the first batch really released in about February, and that one stays in rotation. We actually brewed that beer today. So we're trying to keep that one as regular as possible.
Yeah, I am. You should be damn proud of this beer. This is everything I want. Thanks. From New England IPA. It's balanced. It's soft. It's inviting. It's drinkable, but it still has that punch of hop aroma, beautiful character from that Citra and El Dorado combination, and just like none of the dials are pushed up too much. It's still well in balance, and this is a beer I could drink every day. Braxton, your thoughts?
This is, you know, I'm not a huge fan of New England IPAs, but I really do enjoy this one. It, like you said, it did have a super crazy amount of bitter. I don't feel like my whole entire palate's destroyed, which is always nice with an IPA. You know, I enjoy the fact that I'm getting a lot of those, like, that passion fruit, that the tropic, the citrus. I really enjoy that part to it. It's like, it's really well balanced. I know that's something that everybody says, oh, it's a woo, but like, this is genuinely like well balanced. And even when you get that smell, it's not like overwhelmingly bitterness. It's like, oh, it's in there, but it's not going to overpower you on your tongue or your nose. So it's just a really amazing beer. So I can see why you made this flagship one.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, that was the goal is, you know, looks have a lot, especially in the IPA world. Like, looks are not everything necessarily, but we have quite the beer community here of Cincinnati, and they have a lot of feelings, and they are not afraid to tell you. So if you're going to drop anything that is labeled New England or hazy or juicy or whatever, that thing, before anybody picks it up, gets a whiff of it, takes a sip, it needs to check that box. And so we wanted to make sure it was still classy, you know, really in that nice, beautiful color. I love the color on that. And that has, great, again, that has a lot to do with all those trial batches that we were running on stuff, on ways that we could utilize a little bit more of that haze character. But yeah, it turned out great. I'm really happy about it. And as with every beer we make, even our flagships, nothing's ever concrete. So, well, we always keep looking at little things, just like I was talking about with our kind of traditional styles. Like, you can always take a sip of something and say like, oh, we could, you know, maybe a little tweak here and there. So
awesome. So before joining the brewing world, you worked as a executive assistant in Hollywood. Is that right?
That's right. Quite the 180, right?
Yeah. So what was the weirdest request that you filled for a TV executive?
Man, I won't name names, but I will say that the weirdest thing I ever had to do at like 6 a.m. was go bang on the door of the commissary on a studio lot and request freshly peeled and cut carrots for a Pomeranian.
Wait, say that again. You broke up right when you got to the real heavy hitter of that.
I was asked or demanded to go get freshly shaved and diced up baby carrots for someone's Pomeranian, their little tiny dog. And it was so early that the commissary had not even opened. So the chef that knew me, this was my very first job working in the industry. So I was like running around for all these talk show people. And the level of requests you get in that part of the industry is pretty ridiculous.
Amazing.
That's awesome. You know, so, I don't even know what to say. It's just like, you know, it's not even for me. It's for the dog. Like, this is
cool. Oh, yeah. 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 And it should be no surprise if that's one of countless stories from working in that industry as to why I eventually hit a point where I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to change careers now. I think I want out of this.
Yeah. So, you know, you worked on some pretty, you know, amazing shows. What are some things that you took from working in that industry that were transferable to you into the brewing scene?
I would say, personally, I think it's one of those things that applies. I'm really big on communication as a whole. I think my last gig that I had out there was about 6 years long. It was a very successful show, huge crew that nobody wanted to leave because it was just, you know, you knew you had the show was not going anywhere kind of thing. And so what that helped kind of create was a huge community of people that had, they worked together so well. So, you know, you recognize the areas where you need to lean on somebody a little bit more or less, depending on what the circumstances are. And I've always been very big on teamwork, communication. And I think also like part of it is recognizing where you're strong and where you're weak. That's something I've always made it a point in my life, especially the older I get, it gets a lot easier, is checking ego at the door. And the best way that we can run a brewery, in my opinion, is we have a team of people and everybody is coming to the group together to try to really do what all is our best skill set that's going to create the best product and create the best environment and create overall the best thing for the brand and for the company. And so you know, I go to, I've got two brewers on our staff right now who went through a full brewing science, you know, education stuff. And so it's really great that I can say, like, you know, sometimes we might really get into the weeds a little bit on some like microbiology related stuff. And I'll just, they know full on, like, yeah, I may be by definition your boss and I will answer any questions that you have, but there's definitely some areas where I'll come and be like, I want to hear what your take on this is. I want to hear what you have to say on the matter, because I have reason to go on that you have more intel down that particular subject than I do. And I think a lot of that is just being able to say, I recognize where my strengths are, I recognize where my weaknesses are, and I realize that as a team, we're going to be far better off than saying, you know, mine, and it's, we're going to do things my way and all that kind of stuff. And maybe for better or worse, part of working in that industry was more of solidifying that opinion, because it is a lot of me, I. So you seeing how that translates and you watch what kind of environment that creates for the people around you when you don't work as a group and you don't work as a team, and it kind of creates a little bit more of that gap, and there's not as much trust, there's not as much loyalty, there's not as much community between what you've got going on as an internal team. So that just kind of hammered down that point for me, that at the end of the day, the best version of Listerman is going to be the version where every single person on that team gets an opportunity and feels comfortable and confident bringing themselves to it.
Fostering that collaboration is awesome.
Yeah, I think it's that idea of, you know, you get the right butts in the right seats and you have a team of people that have a shared goal, and it produces results. You know, you hear the difference between, you hear these stories of the differences between these shows that were so successful and ran for so many seasons and the shows that had potential but petered out, maybe because they didn't have the right people or they didn't have these shared goals. And the very same exact thing could be said for successful breweries. You look at the breweries that are super, super successful over decades and time and changes in the industries and ups and downs and new trends, and the things that make them successful is they have the right butts in the right seats and they listen to those people when they're given those opportunities.
Yeah, it goes a long way for sure.
So Listerman started out making homebrewing equipment before launching a homebrew store and then eventually a full-on brewery. Nowadays, the brewery is producing beers on a pretty unique setup. Can you talk a little bit more about the setup that you have there at Listerman?
Unique is certainly a word for it. So we're now this September we'll actually be celebrating our 15th anniversary. And there are definitely days. Thank you. There are definitely days when I wonder myself, like, I can't believe we're still able to do what we're doing, where we are and how, and with this, you know, it's pretty fascinating. We our entire brew house is actually repurposed dairy equipment. So if you've ever taken, and I know you guys and anyone listening, you've probably had a brewery tour before or been having drinks somewhere and been able to say, like, do you care for space? And you go in and you've got these, you know, you climb the ladder up to your little deck and you've got your system. Nope, none of that. None of it. We mash in and out manually everything. We have no rakes in our lauter tun. So in order to make sure we've got a, you know, we can get a well converted mash, you're doing it all, you know, literally shoveling and paddling. It's backbreaking. The best shape of my life was when I was full-time production brewing. I had muscles I didn't know existed. If you can tell, I do a lot of paperwork now, but it's all manual. We've thankfully over the years been able to adjust. A perfect example of that is our mash tun opens up. It's the whole thing opens up from the top, so you can literally see the entire opening instead of just having like a small manway.
Yeah.
And that thing's all wide open. And so as you probably know, in brewing, and especially when it comes to your mash, temperature is very, very important. And so we actually have our hot liquor tank, when we go to mash in, our hot liquor tank is set to 180 degrees because that is how much higher we have to set that because of the heat loss of the mash tun being wide open the way that it is. we're losing so much of that heat that we actually have about a 30 degree difference between what the water is coming in at to what, once you have that grain making contact and kind of killing some of that heat. The only way for us to finish our mash, check our temperature and close that lid and know that we're actually where we need to be for a proper conversion, we're setting it to that high of temperature. So we've definitely over the years found out all the little intricacies of our own system. But it's something. It's something.
No, I was just going to say, it's crazy because that's how many breweries have started. And I would say probably the most influential brewery in American beer history, Sierra Nevada. That's how they started. And it's crazy to hear that Listerman is still kicking it on some refurbished milk equipment and making really killer beers on it too. So awesome.
I will say that maybe one of the highest compliments that I feel like we received was we had a gentleman in town one time, and he was from upstate New York, was traveling for work, was excited to finally get into Listerman Tap Room, and comes in and he's showing me pictures, and he's got this set up in his basement and it's incredible. This guy probably dropped no less than $10,000-$12,000 on what he had set up just in his own home. And I was
just
like,
for home brewing, right?
I was like, a home brewing. And yeah. I was like, that's awesome. You want to see something? And he was like, yeah. So I take him in the back, and there was a solid like 2-3 minutes where he just kind of looked at everything and he didn't really have the words for it. And then he came back out. We walked back out in the tap room. He had a flight board in front of him and he took a sip of something and he just said, "You guys make this on that." And I was like, yeah, have been for 15 years. Here we go. And he's like, I can't wrap my head around that. Like, it's archaic. And I was like, yeah, but you do it long enough, you start figuring out how it works for you and what areas you need to keep an eye out. Cause you're like, oh, that's going to give us problems, but you find ways to kind of adjust it. Cause realistically brewing is troubleshooting at all times. So yeah, it's a point of pride and maybe the most like masochistic way of like, yeah. Like, we have over the years, Listerman has taken a lot of medals for a multiple brands and stuff like that. And it's like, to know that we're producing medal worthy and like, and we're talking like nationwide medal worthy beers and we're doing it on that thing. Like, yeah, that's something you can at least put a feather in your cap a little bit.
You know, I was just thinking when you said at the beginning, this beer was a labor of love. I think all the beers are a labor of love.
Yeah, what beer is it? Yeah, what beer doesn't take intense backbreaking labor for you?
Yeah, especially, yeah. Because if we do, our system is a 10-barrel system. And then just because of how everything operates, if we ever want to, essentially, if you've ever had a Listerman beer that was over about 8.5% ABV, it was a double mash just to hit our 12-barrel collection. So you're talking about a potentially, we can max that thing out around 1,100 pounds, but we try not to ever have to do that. And that's just grain by itself. And so for some of these big ones, it'll be a double mash. So we'll mash in about 700-800 pounds, run the whole process, but we'll only collect it to about 6 barrels in our boil kettle, shut it off, mash all of that out, which, by the way, you're reaching in with a shovel, scooping it, coming out into a barrel, because we do not have a manway. There are no rakes. There's no pulling it out. You literally scoop it up and out over the top and drop it into a barrel.
For folks at home, most modern breweries, the vast majority of modern breweries, whether they're a 7-barrel all the way up to the big boys, they have a dump port on the lower portion of the mash or the louder tun, where you literally just open this manway and you turn on the rakes and the grain comes spilling out and you just got to catch it. The fact that you have to scoop it and lift it up and out of that mash tun is,
yeah.
I don't know if people understand how different that is, how much more labor intensive that is than every other single brewery I visited while I was in Cincinnati. Nobody else is doing that, at least out of the ones that I visited.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to see many. And at this point now, because of what the brewing industry has become, I'd say if something's opened in the last I'd safely say 5 years, probably more than that at this stage. Yeah, I mean, the equipment that you're going to start on day one is already nicer than anything we've ever had in the building. But I mean, like I said, it gets it done. And actually, I will say on that point, like, one of the things that has made Listerman what it is to the community, I can off the top of my head, you know, I've been with Listerman. Actually, yesterday was my 4-year anniversary with Listerman. And
congrats.
Thank you. And I realized that the team that was in place when I started is now either brewing at or working at least 6 different breweries, whether it's in Cincinnati or elsewhere. People definitely have used that opportunity to grow. And the one thing about it is, as someone who is a veteran brewer at another respected brewery here in Cincinnati, something he pointed out one day is, he said, you know, I even tell every single person I've ever hired at any of my locations, if you really want to learn brewing, like, down to the T, like every little detail and why it matters and what's behind it, instead of going into these nice new automatic systems and you flip that switch, you open that valve, you push that button, and you've brewed beer, he's like, no, go brew a beer at Listerman, because you really can't. If you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know the process, if you don't know why everything is being done and what the purpose behind it is, I could tell you right now, there are a lot of people working at breweries in this country that if they came into our brewery and no one told them anything and we said, just make a beer, they never make it to the mash, because it just requires such an intricate understanding of how, I mean, you're using stuff that's not even meant to be used in a brewery. So being able to do it and it helps kind of really explain, oh, I have to go through this much of a rigorous process to execute this task, because this task is this important for these reasons. It just starts making the understanding and the background and the knowledge behind it all, it's ingrained in you forever. Like, I've told people that I've on my brew staff before, I'm like, you literally, if you ever had an opportunity to go work somewhere and it was an automatic system, you'll be fine. Because if you could do it here, you can do it literally anywhere. So that's just like a cool thing that's, I think, has always played a part in our history too, is we've produced a lot of people that have gone on to make incredible beer at other places. And a lot of that background, a lot of that the roots of that came from that labor of love, if you will.
Absolutely. Now, you know, it's time for that the second beer. Now, Matthew, can you tell us a little bit about the Nutcase, but also please don't forget, there's a, you know, if you look at the label, for those of you at home, there are 3 little circles on here. Do you mind telling me what are these 3 little circles? They look like 3 different colors. Can you explain it to me a little bit?
So Nutcase has been around for a while now. We're actually starting to creep up on the 10-year mark from when Nutcase was born. It is, I was talking about earlier that Hophead is like this new flagship for us, because for the longest time, the only 2 beers, one of the only 2 beers that we have had on a regular basis has been Nutcase. We cheekily like to refer to it. It is, by legitimate standards, it is a robust peanut butter porter, because it's flirting with that 7% ABV mark. So it's got a little bit of heft behind it. But this thing has won, I'm going to be completely honest with you, I don't even know what the total number is at this point, but between GABF, World Cup, GABF, US Open, got a few others. Like, it has taken a litany of medals. This thing's been around the block. I think I said something earlier, we were talking about stuff, is like, I don't believe that any beer should ever just be treated as, that's the old recipe, that's how we've been doing it, just grab those grains and throw them in here, because, you know, only little different ways you can do stuff. So we've made tiny adjustments over the years to try to see how, not because we want to change it, but it's always about like, what, there can always be a better version. You can always find a way to make something better when it comes to beer, in my opinion. So like, you keep looking for different ways to say like, oh yeah, we could, you know what, maybe it was a little too harsh on the chocolate, we really want to feature that peanut butter a little bit more, or you know, let's see what happens if we do a little batch of this and we bump up our caramel just a hair and see how those different things can help kind of bridge it. So we haven't really done a ton of changes to it because in my 4 years at Listerman, we've already kind of reached the status of the two main flagships. I could go out and make a peanut butter porter right now that might be completely different and it might be really delicious. But if I slap a nutcase tag on it and somebody tries that drinks nutcase on a weekly basis, it doesn't matter if the beer's good. They're going to be like, this isn't nutcase.
Mm-hmm.
This is not nutcase. So to a certain range, that's one of those types where you're like, you know what? Like, hey, it's here for a reason. It has its reputation for a reason. Let's stay as close to it as we can. Let's do it, always continue to try to make sure that it always, no matter what batch it is, if I tap two kegs from two different batches, you should not be able to tell that that's a different beer. So it's come a long, long way, but, I want to say actually we just crossed over the 8 year mark of that first batch.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying this. It the beer smells like, the roasted nut stand at the mall.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. We love, we have a flat top grill that we put to more use for brewing than anything else at work. So roasted nuts is definitely a very real characteristic. So,
yeah. I had this last week when I was there, and I don't know if it was just because I had, you know, maybe already had a few when I stopped by the brewery. But the aroma is just jumping out of the glass. That roasted nut character, that chocolate. This is just, it's not a beer that I would order often. Not a style that I would order often, I mean. But this is like a really enjoyable version of that peanut butter porter. Peanut butter robust porter.
Robust porter. Yeah. What a fun word. You got to make sure you got to use the cool adjectives when you get a chance, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, back to important questions, you know, Listerman's has an in-house restaurant. It has a very unique name. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's called Tickle Pickle, which I thought was very interesting. I was like, hold on. Let me think about this. And as all music-related pun names for food, such as Metallica, Hamstein, and my personal favorite, the kids' grilled cheese, Melton John Jr., what's your favorite?
So I gotta say, I try when you have it's barely a burger restaurant. you have a burger restaurant at your that convenient. You want to be conscious of how much beef you're putting in your system on a regular basis. So I try when I can. I go with the Eagles, which is their chicken sandwich, which. They do a pretzel bun that's just out of this world. But by name, hands down, is the Mariah Curry. it's perfect. They do, yeah, it's fascinating in the different names they come up with stuff. But the Mariah Curry is hands down my favorite when it comes to the naming.
I like it. Mariah Curry. That's wonderful. So I mentioned I was at your wonderful brewery last week. And one of the things I noticed when I visited was that you serve in-house mead. Do you make that yourself? Like you?
So I don't personally. It's a little ironic because mead maker is, his name is Matt. So a lot of those started off with the branding of Matt's mead. And so I had a lot of people always tell me, love the new mead. I was like, not me.
That's what Matthews means.
No, it's a great, it's a great story actually, because his name is Matt Ferris. Matt's a full-time attorney, and I don't want to put a number on it because I don't want to do him any injustice here, but he's been with Listerman for longer than I have. I know that, but he used to work like one bartending shift a week. I think it was one of those things. We have a lot of bartenders on our staff that all have full-time jobs elsewhere. Don't even really need the extra money. It's just there's something about the community, and they've built like regulars, and it's just a great environment. So they all like work like their one shift a week or whatever, and they don't want to ever let that go. And that was Matt. Matt was coming in. He would work behind the bar on, I think he was like Fridays for a long time. And in his downtime, he started making mead at home. And so every like Friday, he would come in and he would bust open his little cooler. And he's like, these are the five new ones I've got this week. And I mean, it was like all kinds of incredible stuff. Blueberry, almond, this, and this one's a key lime pie. What, and just, he was just starting to like blow the doors open on terms of like the different flavor profiles and all this kind of stuff. And so as that was going on, we were at a moment in our staffing and our production side of things that we were still looking to kind of have mead as an option that we wanted to have for people. And so I actually, this was when Dan and Sue were still the owners, and I just went to them and I was like, I think I have a really easy solution here. What if we just provide the equipment and the supplies and we turn Matt loose? It's just that whatever he makes is now a Listerman product. And everybody immediately thumbs up. So now he has his nice little wine room in the back, and he comes in. Well, I'll see him for like an hour on a Monday, and he'll pop in for like 3 hours on a Wednesday. He just kind of comes and goes. He keeps an eye on his stuff, but that's all Matt's creations. And he actually, he just recently won a medal for the first one. He had won some in like the mead equivalent to home brewing when he was doing stuff at home, but he finally entered some stuff that he's done under the Listerman brand into some like major competitions, and he just won his first medal for mead. So yeah, it's wow. Really awesome to have that extra branch, especially because I think a conversation, I think for a whole nother evening, is just talking about, you know, the different avenues that the industry is going as a whole, but the non-beer sector within the craft industry, I think, is definitely an area worth, you know, really exploring. And so having those mead options, and he's done some stuff. I mean, we've taken some things that we've had barrel aged, and after we take the beer out of the barrel that we're going to use, he's filled those barrels back with his mead. So we've got some barrel aged meads, and he's starting to really crank them out right now. And it's really cool because our distributor finally started picking up some of that product too, because it turns out there's actually stores all over Ohio that are like, we'd love to put some mead on the shelf. And so it's really cool to see a guy who is an attorney for a living and started making mead on the side. And now he can say that the meads that he's making are on shelves at different stores all over Ohio.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great story. I was going to ask you about like what the difference is between making mead and beer, but I honestly, this is something we didn't talk about last week. We talked about the need for differentiation and non-beer options and breweries and tap rooms, but I don't think I asked you about the meat, and that's so great that it just went into that story. Shout out to Matt Ferris. Matt Ferris Esquire.
Matt Ferris is the man. Yeah.
Okay. Matthew, what is one thing other than beer, other than the brewing scene in Cincinnati, what is one thing there that you wish more people knew about?
Ooh. I don't know if it's a thing exactly, but one thing I will say I talk about a lot when I talk to friends that aren't around here or anything is, I grew up in Mississippi. I had all these ideas about what I wanted to do with my life. I ended up in New York for a little bit, then I ended up in Los Angeles for a little bit, and through turns of events, I ended up in Cincinnati. And the one thing that I can say is, Cincinnati finds a way to check all the boxes when it comes to like, there's nightlife, there's great music, there's sports, there's all these things to do. There's like multiple restaurants making top 100 in the country list. So the food's great. There are incredible cocktail bars. There is, in my opinion, it should be in the conversation for the greatest craft beer city in America. Just saying. But it's amazing. Like, the amount of things that you have at your disposal while simultaneously being able to afford your life, and you still get a lot of that that like really personal, friendly, authentic relationships that you build with people. And there's this awesome kind of blend of the two, because I'll be honest with I moved away from Los Angeles like 3 years after I think I probably really wanted to, and it was a lot of FOMO. To bring back your FOMO from the Taylor Swift thing, I had a lot of FOMO because I was like 30, and I was like, I can't leave LA. Like, I've spent my whole life wanting to get here. Now I'm here, but I'm kind of miserable. But like, I can't leave because like, what else am I gonna do? And I'm always bragging about the fact that you can do anything you want in Los Angeles. Every artist you love, every musical artist you love, if they're going on tour, they're coming through here. All that, you know, whatever. And then I got here, and I was like, oh, like, this is all of the best parts of that, minus the weather. It's all the best parts of that, but I enjoy my life so much more. Like, my quality of life went through the roof once I moved here. And initially, you know, I was like, yeah, I can see this being maybe a stop. Like, as I've talked about being in different places, like, I'm not one of those people. I'm not opposed to packing my stuff and trying a new place. Like, I've never had that fear. But now I've started to hit that point, and it's and truthfully, Listerman has played a huge part of that. Is I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere. I love it here. I love the people that I've brought into my life by being here. And, you know, I love going, like, FC Cincinnati, our soccer team is doing incredible this season. So I've gotten a chance to go to almost all the home games, and just watching that environment and seeing that whole, like, watching that whole thing just grow. Being here these last couple of years, watching the Bengals just go from like, oh, they're the Bengals, to, oh, we should be winning. We're going to play for Super Bowls now. Like, it invigorates the whole community. It just adds this really awesome energy that it's palpable. Like, you can actually feel it within the city. And I don't know, it reminds me of the things I actually did enjoy about growing up in the South, but it has also the things that I enjoyed about living in, you know, a Los Angeles or New York. It's kind of this nice mix of the two. That's a really good sweet spot. And the beer is so damn good.
Yeah. There's so many things I could say to follow that up. Geez. Yeah. I feel a kindredship with Cincinnati since the first time I went there, experience in the beer scene, the layout of the city, the general vibe of people there, and the atmosphere around the city, and the colloquial nature of the people. It felt a lot. Oh, this is a record. How long has it taken me to mention Pittsburgh since we started interviewing our guest? This is certainly a record, but it reminded me a lot of my own beloved hometown. And one of the reasons that I love this place so much is for those similar reasons. And I see that so much in Cincinnati. And yeah, I would agree. I would put it, Cincinnati needs to be talked about more in the beer to scene discussion. And that's why we're featuring them for the second time on this show. Because if you haven't gotten it by yet, we really think Cincinnati, people should know about the beer scene there. It is phenomenal. The people are great. The people behind the beer are great. The people in the tap rooms are great. The people that are going to serve you your beers are great. The tap room environments are wonderful, and the beers are exceptional. World-class in many cases. And one of those world-class examples is a brewery that we feature tonight, Listerman. So Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. Where can folks find Listerman beer?
So we are currently still distributed just in Ohio. We are at our volume. It doesn't actually make sense for us to try to go too far out of that range. So we are an Ohio based, an Ohio distributed company. But if you live in Ohio, even if you're not in Cincinnati, we do ship our stuff. So you can find our stuff on our website. Johnny does a great job of keeping update, you know, everything that's new releases, things like that. So if you are in the state of Ohio, we can ship directly to you. But also don't ever hesitate to keep an eye out, because Tavor, who is national distribution for breweries from all different types of places, they'll they come calling quite often asking for some new stuff from us that they can distribute around the country. So every once in a while, if you're a DeVore user, there will be some Listerman stuff on there as well. So that might be an opportunity if you're not in Ohio that you can still get your hands on it.
Awesome. Yeah. And that website is Listerman. Oh, I had it up and then I moved away from that. Listermanbrewing.com. And if you didn't know yet, Listerman is spelt with two N's on the end. Listerman. I think I've been pronouncing those two N's. If there was one end, I would be very definitively saying Listerman. But I haven't been. Braxton, final thoughts on our beers tonight.
Great job. I mean, with that last impassioned speech by Matt, I'm starting to think that maybe he's in the wrong business. He should be working for Cincinnati Tourism. Why you should be here? See him on billboards and commercials.
There you go. Yeah. I'm just gonna be like, you know what? I'm giving up. I'm actually a mascot now. just give me a microphone. Let's do this thing.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing though, because I keep talking about how it's great that this place is so affordable. I don't really want to tell people how great it is. They need to stop moving here.
Keep it down.
Visit.
Keep it down. Yes. And yes. Then go the hell home.
Just visit. Got you.
Hey, that has been my very respectful relationship with your city, and I hope to continue it that way.
I'm excited. Next time you guys are in town, please reach out. Let me know. I'd love to have you guys. We'll drink all the drinks and have a good time.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Awesome. We'll bust out some of those barrel aged meads and really test out the Uber and Lyft system in Cincinnati.
Yeah, they get put to work.
Everybody at home, if you are enjoying this show, we need to say thank you to the breweries that help make it possible. So thanks again to Listerman for supplying beers, not only for us to drink tonight, but for our beer club. And that's really how we keep the lights on here. So head over to shop.citybrewtours.com, check out subscription options, check out the perks and benefits of being a City Brew Tours Beer Club subscriber. You not only get great beers like these shipped to you on a monthly basis and get to join the live stream as we record the podcast, but you get wonderful special perks that only come when you're a member of a beer club of the oldest brewery tour company in the United States, City Brew Tours, with over 20 locations now. So check out shop.citybrewtours.com for subscription option, but also check out citybrewtours.com. If you're heading to a city, it's pretty likely we do beer tours there. So check it out and help support us so we can continue making awesome beer educational and fun things like this. Next week, hey, guess what? We're going to be talking more about Cincinnati, this wonderful gem of the state of Ohio. We're going to be featuring beer from some of the biggest producers in Cincinnati and some of the biggest producers in all of Ohio. So join us next week as we have some tasty beers, some tasty chats. And before we go, given that it is this week in Pittsburgh, I do want to say this. I stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. It must be exhausting, always rooting for the anti-hero. Stay safe, be kind, and support your local breweries. That's Taylor Swift's lyric for all those people that didn't get it yet. It's bringing it back to the beginning. It's Taylor Swift. Cheers, everyone. Bye.